Welcome to the Diary 101 podcast. I am your host, Aka Kandelwa Kandepwe, also known as Aka. Imagine being in South Africa and they call you AKA in Starbucks. Still traumatized, but today is something I have. Okay, again, I always say I've been looking forward to this because every time we pick a guest to come on the podcast, it's really just out of curiosity of me and the team. We're always like, okay, cool. So why would we want this particular person to be in? And sometimes it also comes from Akka's interest. Listen how I'm also putting myself in third party. Yeah, so Akka has interest in different things. So today's guest is somebody I call him an acquaintance. We have mutual friends and we've kind of hang out together because they really have this cool initiative that I love, and it's called Let's Hike Osaka, or We Hike Osaka. Imagine not knowing something you're part of, a community you're part of, forgetting the name. That's me in any day anyway. So I love to hike, and I've always wanted to have like a community I can hike with, because as a girl you can't hike alone. Guys, life is hard as a girl. And if you're bad with navigations and directions and communication like me, you wanna hike with a bunch of cool people you don't know and maybe find the love of your life there. That's the coolest introduction ever. But with no further ado, I would like to call on Kasonde. Hi, Kasonde.
Hi, Aka. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am all good. I'm good.
Did you hear the last part of the introduction?
I heard this, and funny enough, I always tell this story of how I got about four friends to hike with me some time back. Little did I know two of those people connected. A few months later, they're engaged. I think they're married right now. I've lost track. I've been quite busy of late. But there was a Chilangamulilo some time back. Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh. Honestly, I don't think, but I did reach out to say that, you know, your other value proposition for your business could be like Tinder. A lot of people are coming and looking for relationships. We just don't say it out loud. A lot of us are single. And then, not that I would do it anyway. You know me, when I'm hiking, I'm a very different human being. I don't want to talk to anybody. But yeah, I do think one of the value proposition for your business is and community of people dating. You have a WhatsApp group, and I think you have over 900 people there. Literally. Not all of them are married or in a relationship. Let them date themselves.
And then the response was the thing I gave you. Soulmates during the hike, they are free to, but yeah. I think we'll stick strictly to hiking for now. Yeah.
Before we are quoted that Kasonde and Aka encouraged us to date. No, but apart from the romance side of everything, which is something we always are happy to talk about, not really. I love the sense of community that you are creating for your business. How did you envision it to turn out like this in like how many, in less than a year, right? Did you envision it to somehow become such a big idea that everybody wants to be part of it?
To be honest, I didn't envision it to become this big. I didn't even think it would be this big because of the nature of how it was started. So the group, the WhatsApp group existed before I even joined, and there were about less than 100 people there, you know. So a cool friend of mine called Inchindi, she invited me for his 27 hike. She's like, we need to meet this guy who organizes this hike for his 27. And yeah, just like this podcast, I always planned to go, but something always came up. And One Saturday I went and I met one of the admins, that's Daniel. And so I met Daniel. Daniel was doing the first 27 and through our mutual friend, we got to see it, and he told me, look, at we can grow it to this scale, and you know, grow a community of hikers in Zambia. Because having lived in East Africa for a short while, I saw that Zambia was seriously slacking in that area. Like, Zambians don't hike. Yeah, like literally a lot of people, even an easy hike would be termed as a very difficult one. Yeah, so once we started, we rebranded. The group was called Hiking Timankala Bize, but we rebranded it to We Hike, opened Instagram page, opened Facebook, and you know, just tried to have sort of a digital footprint. Yeah, and with that, we decided, let's do these hikes more regularly, and yeah, let's see how we can plan them so that they become consistent, because people don't want to be part of something that's inconsistent. So last year we were doing, it was a hike, one hike in a month or one hike between 2 months. And we saw that, you know, people were always reaching out to us and demanding that, you know, we do more hikes. So for 2024, we planned for 2 activities per month. And with that came the flood of people, you know, it just grew so exponentially. And it's really been awesome and tiresome to say, because organizing such hikes and such events is not easy. But yeah, I remember you said the group is at 900. I'll just like to let you know that we are now at 1,025 and we've reached the limit. So yeah. It's a very big community. So I didn't envision it to grow so fast.
I like it, right? I'm glad I'm still part of the group and I know you personally. Even if we have like 1,000 people, that's such a big community, right? And like we were joking around in the beginning, when you hike with a bunch of strangers, which we mostly do, my friends and I do stuff together as friends, right? So if I am going hiking, definitely one of the crew members will be there, because it's, we always like to have activities to do together as friends every month. So every month, if we're not meeting every weekend, because it's very possible with us, we like to do activities together to bond, to laugh, to reflect and everything. And creating such a community and having us group of friends come hike with you is such a great initiative. So when we look about in other relationships like business networking, you'd be surprised if you ask to say, oh, how many people here have found business partners? How many people, some have found partners, right? How many here have started friendships? How many here have started so many stuff with random strangers they connected at a hike with? Because when it's like a marathon, it's like running a marathon, right? If you're running a marathon, you already know that if you meet me at the marathon, we already believe in one thing. The reason why we're at the marathon, if it's an APSA run and any other run, we know the SDG run by UN, it's, I can be friends with you, an acquaintance, because I already know we believe in something common. And yeah. Yeah. I do think the hike does that for a lot of people. If you'd actually ask to say, oh, okay. It's really good for networking, I have to admit.
Very true, very true. That I must also admit. Because some of the time when people are registering up, I get shocked to see some names. I'm like, isn't this the maybe boss at this area, or maybe then this person work for this big organization? And I've met quite a lot of people like that. Yeah. So in terms of interactions and in terms of growing a community, you always meet new people. Somebody says every hike has new people, and you're getting to meet these new people. And I've seen people come from total strangers to friends. Whenever they're hiking, they always want to tag along with their other person. Yeah, so it's just this whole big community of people who love hiking, but also interact at many other different levels. So that's one thing I think I had to bring out.
Yeah. When you think back, what made you start liking nature, hiking, and outdoor activities?
So this is actually a very, very funny story. Very, very funny story. So I always loved nature. I think I knew as far back as 2015. I always loved hiking, though I didn't get the chance to. You know, growing up in Kitwe, the only place which looked like a mountain was Black Mountain. And you couldn't go there because of parabolas. Yeah, so what happened is in 2018, I had a big operation, you know, on my abdomen, and it sort of brought me out of the gym. You know, I couldn't work out, I couldn't exercise intensively, I couldn't play rugby, and that was my aim, or you know, like that's what people knew me by. Kasonde, the rugby player, the gym guy. And so I sort of got a bit into depression. That coupled with being dumped, you know, one of my exes just offloaded me after I had the operation, a week or two after. So, yeah, I couldn't work out. I had gained some weight, and I needed a way to exercise. So a friend of mine invited me to his farm over in Kafue. And whilst we're there, whilst the workers were doing their work, I saw this nice hill. And I asked him, have you ever hiked to the top? And he told me no, but he would love to. So that day was, that's when I did my first hike. So we went up that hill. One of my older brothers just refused from the onset. He stayed down. My other older brother wanted to stop midway, but we pushed him to the top. And we finally got to the top. So that's the genesis of me hiking and me starting to hike consistently. But yeah, I think before that, I always loved nature. I've always been a nature person. I've always loved being, you know, in the outdoors, around trees, around open spaces, around waterfalls, around nice hills. Yeah, that's always been me.
That's interesting. I think... I'm from Western Province, specifically Mungo, right? We have the Balasich Plains, the Mungo rice, and the good mangoes. Yeah, I'm struggling in Lusaka at this point. But I used to hike in the plains. I know now the plains are dry, right? Because it's summer. By April, the plains are filled up. That's when we have like the Kuomboka ceremony, which is our traditional ceremony. So imagine, so you have a space from July to somewhere November, December to hike in the plains. I wish I could camp in the plains. I don't think that's a good idea, but it's a good thing. I hope one day you guys can go to Western Province for camping and hiking. I know it's not easy to get stuff done there, but you'd actually enjoy nature, because there's so many places you can take a walk that side, but the plains is like one of the safest place. Yeah, kind of reminded me of my childhood, and every distance is walkable in Mungo, so you kind of just walk everywhere. So yeah, I used to actually walk a lot. I don't walk a lot here, but yeah. So it's interesting how the Copper Belt is like a total different place to the western side of the country in terms of nature and trails to hike.
Yeah, totally different.
And you also realize that we used to walk and hike a lot as kids, and now no one wants to walk or hike. What do you think is the shift?
I think when we were kids, the time we were growing up, I think there was that parents' style where most parents allowed to play outside, to walks, to explore outside spaces or open spaces. But now we see parenting style has shifted to more of, you know, buying consoles for kids, PlayStation 5. Okay, so the shift in parenting styles, you know, where parents now want their kids to be indoors, to be playing games, you know, the Xbox, PlayStation 5s, you know, we barely see kids playing outside as we used to. But also talking about ourselves, you know, from childhood and growing up, we came from such an open parenting style where parents would allow us to play with, you know, kids in the neighborhood. I practically knew all kids in my street and at different houses, depending on the day, you know. But growing up, it's just the thing of more responsibilities. You have an 8 to 5. By the time you're coming back, you're tired. By the time it's a Friday, you're stressed. And yeah, I think most people have other activities they would want to do. Looking at Lusaka, people always want to chill, go to granddaddy, go to one of these happening chill spots. And there's just no time to hike or to do anything outdoors, you know. So I think that has been the shift, looking at first parenting styles, us being kids back then, kids nowadays, also looking at ourselves, like what has changed so much. You know, we now have responsibilities, we now have work, people drive almost all the time. So yeah, those are some of the notable changes I can point to.
And that's very interesting, right? The people making that shift and change were the same people that benefited from parents giving kids freedom to explore and enjoy life. I see that with my own child, with my sister, right? I always have her indoors, which is a bad thing because then we're not teaching them other skill sets of playing around with kids. Like when you, what we learned, and I'm making an assumption here, is we learned how to communicate, right? We learned how to communicate. We learned how to socialize. And then now we're raising a generation where they just talk to people online. They have devices at the age of 5. They're on Instagram, TikTok. And notably, the only time they interact with people is at school or church. So they don't even know, they don't socialize with enough kids. So it's going to be interesting to see how they're going to, we're going, the next generation, and mostly also the Gen Zs, are going to be in society in the next few years when they have to like go to university or get a job, because they might not have some of the social skills. Yeah, it's like something I've really noticed amongst ourselves. I'm a Gen Z, but I was raised by my grandparents, so we were allowed to break our legs and have accidents. As long as you didn't die, you're okay.
That's a good one. That means don't die. Just stand up. Yeah, okay.
You add poison. You know what I mean? You add poison. Okay, cool. Here's milk. I miss being a kid. Yeah. I also, you mentioned something very interesting, and something I like to talk about, right? Yeah. I'll put it in a sense of fun. Mostly in Lusaka and different generations, and I wouldn't just say Lusaka, like different parts of the country, people only associate fun when you at a place chilling, drinking, having fun with your friends, but it's like a social place, a happening place, right? They don't consider hiking fun, going to an art gallery, or just going to a bookstore fun. And it's just like the different perceptions of how people want to have fun. And then you get to realize like majority of everybody is forced to have the same activities so we can fit in. And now you guys created a different community of saying, here's an alternative way of having fun and just having downtime with yourself and other people. It's such a good initiative. I keep emphasizing that. How do you go? Yeah, no, please go on.
I was saying that at least we have added the activities that you can do back on a weekend. So,
Yeah. And you've given people the option and choice. I love options. I love knowing I can go have fun and let's say party with some friends, but I also love the option that I can actually just go hiking with myself, my friends, or strangers. It's good to just have like the alternative options. So, how did you go from trade policy to hiking?
I always say that my main job is hiking. Then, what gives me an income is my formal training. Yeah, so if there was a way, if miraculously I was born in East Africa and there was a way for me to monetize hiking, like at a large scale, I would do it. I would do it as my main career.
I find that very interesting. I would also say that my main job is reading and going to art galleries and bookstores. And then honestly, I'm just a consultant during the week. Because consulting gives me money, but I'm actually trying to figure out how do I make money out of just reading books. It's a good thought. It's a good thought, guys. Like, how do you make money out of just reading books? Yeah, that's my thought every day as I wake up and record podcasts and work for companies every day.
I actually get you.
You can relate, ne? So I had a guest here and we talked about like the different alternatives and how we are trying to create different ways of making money. Like the good thing about where we're at is you can make money in different ways, right? And you also have the potential to create the world you want to live in. So it's something worth thinking about. I do think in like the next 2 years you might have like a really full-time business. With your hiking business because it's really growing and like there's so much interest and there's so much you can actually do with it. So yeah, it's very interesting to that you've created people another option, and I really also can't wait to see how you shift in creating that business that actually just pays you every month and you're okay.
I'm looking forward to that. And yeah, it would be interesting looking at all dynamics as well. And yeah, it's going to be difficult because Zambia is not the most mountainous place in even Central Africa, East or Southern Africa. But yeah, because one thing about creating a mess is you need variety, Yeah, so really looking forward to that. Really brainstorming with the team behind those doors, behind the scenes. We are really trying to, take it a notch higher. So we'll see in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I really can't wait to see where you guys go next. So I want to learn a little bit more about trade policy. What does trade policy? I have an idea what trade policy is. What do you actually do during the week in terms of trade policy?
Thing is, I am also a consultant, so I'm a trade policy expert by training. But from the time I finished my postgrad, I have been consulting. So usually, what I do is sit on my computer almost the whole day. I get very huge sets of data I have to analyze and produce reports. So usually what I do on a weekday basis. And now you see the way that I want to hike on the weekend because it's really stressful. It's really time. Yeah, that's what I do in a nutshell. And from that, once I analyze it, write reports. In those reports, there has to be policy recommendations. Yeah, so with the data that I was given and with the analysis I've done, what direction do you think policy should take based on the evidence of the data?
So who are some of the organizations you work with?
I can mention the organizations I work with, NGOs. I can just term that most of them are NGOs, development agencies as well, and multilateral agencies as well. Yeah. So in a broad nutshell, that's the closest I can.
I also have a kind of an idea of who you work with most times, but it also, what do I want to ask? Yeah, but it's okay. My next thing is, if you'd ever, do you enjoy your work? Or was it the reason why moved from full-time to just being a consultant?
I do love my work with a passion, right? I do love my work. I love what I do. I love influencing policy. You know, just to sit back and see, oh, okay, that thing being implemented is because of my work, right?
Yeah.
I do love my job. I do love my profession. But I think what motivated me to move from an 8 to 5 to full-time consulting is growth, you know, personal, career, and financial as well. Yeah, you know, sometimes you'll be doing the most, and the math is just not mathing, you know, the math is just not mathing. And
I know.
Yeah, but consultancy. Then the other reason was freeing up my calendar. Yeah, when I had an 8 to 5 job, my calendar was so packed. It was so packed. And I was stressed every week. That's why I needed to go hiking, right? But now my calendar is so free. I can travel. I can do more with my time. I can do more with my time. I can relax, sit at home. I can travel within Zambia and even outside the country. I usually do that sometimes. Yeah. So those were my motivations.
Does it also mean that your values changed? Maybe in the beginning when you were starting up your career, what you wanted or what you valued the most in terms of your career was like experience and exposure. And then when you reached a part where the utility was the same, and you realize that, oh, I'm actually just giving a lot and I'm not getting a lot in return, and I'm growing, my time is just, I just do the same thing every week and I'm stressed. So do you think like your values changed to what you valued the most then and what you value now?
I think my values have remained constant for the largest time. Even when I was starting out my career, you know, usually they tell graduates, oh, you don't really bring much to the table, right? You have to learn. But I was pretty confident that I brought quite a lot to the table. So not in a cocky way, but yeah, I would always bring like the competitive and new edge whenever I would work. And it was noticed quite a lot. I also had one rule. I think earlier on in my career, this is a time where my values changed. I had a job that required me working on a Saturday. I left, I had a three-month period of, probation. And after that, I was given a contract, but I refused. I was like, I can't continue working on Saturday because I need Saturday to de-stress. I needed to hike. I needed to, you know, to just see some green space or some outdoor space, right? Yeah, but from that moment in time, yeah, it's been constant. Even my former bosses, they would tell you whenever it's Saturday, my phone goes on airplane mode. I don't want to get any phone call. No, please do this work. I always make sure that by Friday, I would always make sure, sorry, that by Friday, I would finish my week's work, the work I'd set out for the week, and even go into some work for Monday so that I don't get any phone calls. The weekend is mine. I need to relax. I need to de-stress so that Monday, I am at a top-notch level. You know, my energy is back. My energy is high as well. Yeah.
I remember us having this conversation about Saturday because I got a job that required me to work on a Saturday. I have to testify, guys. No, I left work on a Saturday if I am not required to be there. But then I was required to be there and plan and create content and present and mentor people for like over 6 months this year. And I just said, I can't. And so what happened also was they kind of extended the period for the program and the project. So it also meant that they were extending into my time in summer. And I just clearly communicated to my supervisors and said, we said this project to be done in 6 months. You are now extending to another 3 months. That's eating my time. That's me. I won't chill with my friends on a Saturday. I won't do anything else because I'll be tired from here. And if I just want to sit and work on the things I love working on a Saturday, I won't do anything because I'm supposed to be here. So that I just said, I really don't want to do anything I'm required to do work-wise on a Saturday. And then I always remember our conversation. You said, okay, work on a Saturday. It would never be me. And I'm like, okay, I now relate.
Yeah. A friend of mine always says, you can only give what you want, right?
Yeah.
That if you're constantly tired, you're constantly fatigued, you're constantly stressed, you won't have anything to give at your workplace, right? I'm not saying that I can't work on a Saturday. There are certain circumstances where, you know, deadlines were close and I've had to work for like a Saturday. But it being put in my contract that, oh, you work Monday to
I like the option of not working on a Saturday. And my mentor always says, when you do stuff beyond your contract, always remind your employer because then they should know that you're going an extra mile. Like, this is not normal. Right. This isn't part of my contract. I am literally just going an extra mile for you. And I like doing that with my current employer because I'm just like, I know my contract in my head. I'm not required to do that. I'm doing that because you need somebody to do that, not because I'm required. People tend to appreciate you more when they know you're going an extra mile because, you know, people would be abusing you in these workplaces and thinking it's normal. In the name of experience.
That's very true. Very, very true. Wow.
And I also think you mentioned something earlier about the workplace and recent graduates when they tell you, oh no, you don't bring much to your table. You're doing this for experience, so you need to do a lot. One of the reasons why I don't have a full-time, why I don't work for a corporation is I don't want anyone telling me I don't bring much to the table and I'm being abused. Like, I don't bring much to the table, but I work so many hours. No. What advice would you give a young, a recent graduate when it comes to experience and how to draw the boundary?
So, just a leaf from my own book is when I was in uni, I didn't want to be an A-plus student. I knew I was an A-plus student, but you know, those people who just gun, who are all about books, right? They don't want to expose themselves to industry aspect. As soon as much as I would get good grades, I would make good grades, okay. Excellent grades, right? I used to mix that with a bit of industry perspective, right? Because my undergrad is in econ, right? So I used to read a lot of journal articles. Yeah, so I think fresh graduates should get a bit of industry perspective whilst they're still students, right? Because I was doing an undergrad in econ, but I would read a lot of journal articles, I would interact with lecturers, I would read a lot of publications. So I was up to date with a lot of things. Even when it came to things like my thesis, I did something quite technical because I had exposure reading journal articles and I would interact with lecturers, I would read a lot of publications online, you know, and not just get what the books are telling me. So I just wasn't gunning, you know. So I did one thing that set me apart in my last year in uni. So I got this file from a friend. It had exit codes and just mastery of Excel. And I gunned that folder. I am quite a guru in Excel. I can do quite a lot of things in Excel. On top of that, I also got very good at STATA, which is a statistics package which analyzes. So the time I got out and started my first job, the one where I only stayed there for 3 months, right? So everyone thought, okay, this is a novice, we have to teach him. And of course, yeah, so I think the advice, or the key advice I can give to fresh graduates is that build your capacities the time you're still a student. When you're in your third, fourth year, you know, learn a bit about Excel, learn a bit about Microsoft Word, try to have some mastery in it, learn how to send properly formatted emails. That's one thing I've seen. You know, people are really bad at sending a very good and professional email. And just learn how to use PowerPoint, the Microsoft suite or the package, you know, Excel, Office, PowerPoint. These three are very cardinal. So build capacities whilst you're a student. By the time you're going out, don't be too full of yourself. Don't let your ego get the better of you. Enter the workspace open to learn, you know. Don't be arrogant, be open to learn, but also make sure you present the skills you know. Excel is a very valuable skill. You find a lot of people in office spaces don't know how to use Excel. They don't know how to make good PowerPoints. So once you come to a workplace already with those few skills, you will have an added advantage, and you know, you the people you find won't take advantage of you because they see that you're bringing something to the table. Then critical thinking as well, you need to be able to be a critical thinker. So I think that's the advice I can give to graduates.
And also, I also think that graduates are not all at fault, right? The education system that we have is really meant for you to just, we are taught to be in school, like be in school. If you're being in school, live the school life. Then when you're out of school, you are learning this thing. We learn this stuff. We learn Excel, we learn Word, but we don't practice them enough. So we don't even have opportunities where enough of us have access to internships, right? Then also the lack of initiative amongst the students themselves to actually actively invest in themselves, learn new skills is the biggest problem. Because right now we can blame, like, oh no, we're not doing enough in the education system. It's also very important to just say, okay, we might not be doing enough, but just the lack of initiatives from our end to just actively learn new skills, even just online, and practice them on your own alone. A few people do that, and I always like saying this: you can become very successful in Zambia just by going an extra mile, just adding 10%. You can become very successful because a few people are doing that. A few people.
Very, very true. And you remind something my father always used to say, very tough man, you know. So when I was a youngster, I would pass, like, I would be in the middle of the class, you know, because we're like 30, I would be maybe 10, 15. And whenever we're reviewing the questions, I failed, I would be like, everyone knows that. And used to sit down and tell me, just because everyone failed doesn't mean you should fail. Some people got this question correct, so why shouldn't it be you? And yeah, whoever this message is falling on, I hope they hear. I hope they listen, because not everyone might take it up. But yeah, you just have to be the one to push. In as much as we might say, okay, the education system has failed us, but we know that it has failed us. Why don't we remedy it at an individual level? I think there are things that require an individual effort and a group effort, right? Yeah. So even maybe like the stuff I did, I had perfected some of these things when I was in my undergrad, and I can't say that my whole class perfected it. I don't know how the transition from being a graduate to being assimilated into industry, but all I can say is my transition was very smooth.
And you also said something, there's certain things that are individual effort and group effort. My first lecturer, his name is Mr. Mulusa, Mr. Victor Mulusa. Like, we took business environment, something like that, in first year. And he said, before you ask for a group study, have you studied on your own? Like, what do you bring on your table, right? And I think that's like the best advice I got in my whole lot. I did get good advices, but that was my favorite advice to always go to when I had to complain about something, is even now. It's, yeah, because I want group effort. What have I done on an individual level to actually contribute to this, to contribute to myself? And how do I bring, what else do I bring to the group effort? Because you can be crying for group effort, but maybe now you don't even have the capacity to be in a group because you know nothing. So if you're in a group, what do you bring to that group? So as an individual, you want to work for a certain company. Yeah, of course, you bring your degree. Let's say we're talking about degree holders here, right? What else do you bring with that degree? Like, as an individual, what capacities, like you were talking about, Excel, Word, how to make a presentation, how to use Canva, how to send a proper email, how to use AI, right? Like, how to use, just how to even talk to people. Like, do you even have those skill sets? Like, can you be integrated into their culture? So it's a lot of, I hope anybody listening, it's a lot of things about individual learning. And honestly, that's what my business is about. I like people to take personal responsibility about stuff. And when we have conversations about the education system, we're not saying, okay, the education system is not so good, guys, right? But then when we talk about the education system, we're bringing awareness to where the education system is at, so that when you get into the system, then you can actually know the gap and try to fill in the gap with yourself, with different skill sets, with different courses online. I don't know if that makes sense. I genuinely believe, like, personal development is like one of my favorite conversations, because I'm always so interested in knowing how the other people did it. Like, you're very successful in your industry, or you actually might be one of the top 1% very soon. How did you do it, and what can other people take from it? When you look back to your childhood, Kasonde, what's like your favorite childhood memory? Like, was it the feeling of being at the concert? Was it because you felt like you were part of a community? Or maybe with your siblings or your parents, your cousins? Like, what about that environment do you like the most?
Yeah, so I like being part of the concert because I like the fact that my friends and I would actually do would actually go with the script, you know, and deliver a very good performance on stage, and people, parents would just clap for us. I think when we did the Nalikwanda, that was one of the best performances they had seen that night. So we got a very huge round of applause from the parents, from friends as well, and we just acted it out well. Then the other aspect is just that it was just me and my friends. So you know how kids are. We were just having fun, you know. We were given a certain script, but for us, it wasn't that we should follow it to the letter. So we had quite a lot of fun that day. Yeah.
So one thing I am learning about you is you, because on the left, being part of a community, you like doing stuff with people as much as you like being an individual. And most of the stuff we've talked about today, you joining a hiking club and now being a business owner, I hope I'm saying that right, and you being part of a concert, you working or having the initiative to invest in yourself shows that you like being an individual, and you also like being part of a group. And just a feel of community is, I think, something you're always seeking for and creating for yourself and others. Did I do a good job describing you?
Sort of, yeah.
Sort
But
of.
sort of, I'm speaking of community. I want to create a community. Yeah.
Yeah, I do
Yeah.
think so. You are part of a community and you've been creating and experiencing community in different ways. Your first childhood memory is a concert. You being part of an act, you having fun with your friends and acting and just having people cheer on for you. When you had an accident after a heartbreak, you and your friend deciding to hike and take walks and just having that time to just be outside and enjoy. You being part of a hiking club and owning that business with a few of your partners. Even the work you do. So being a policy analyst, right? Might not seem like it's being part of the community. You get to see your work being part of something bigger and you helping with policy and then getting to see that be actualizing and being placed. So it's you're always contributing in different ways and you're always alternating around your values and your priorities.
Yeah. That's good.
So, what do you think is the next step for international policy or just policy in Zambia?
So I'll talk about it in the trade perspective, because most of foreign policy for nations is based off private sector interests and trade policy. So I think the next thing for Zambia is, you know, we need to harness our neighboring countries. I know I sound cliche, but most of our exports go to Congo, they go to Zim, they go to Malawi and SA. Think of these other African countries. We're not exporting so much. And how do we leverage what we have in order to build these relations? One, it's our foreign policy should be very, very direct. Of course, we need to have an overall policy, right? But it should be broken down into strategies. Like, what strategy do we have to to export to Mozambique or Angola. These are Portuguese-speaking countries, right? So we expect that trade might not be as good as English-speaking countries because of the language barrier. So what strategy do we have? Are we training our SMEs? Are we training our big corporates? Of course, big corporates, it's easy for them to export, right? They can have. But SMEs, how are we training them to export? Do they know how to export? And you find that they don't know how to export. They don't know the challenges of exporting. They don't even know how to price their products on the export markets, right? So that's the base. So once we develop these strategies for specific countries, then we need to teach our SMEs how to export. We need to see the landscape of businesses. We know that majority of businesses in Zambia are SMEs, right? So if you want to increase exports, these are a very important constituency that we should address. Do they know how to export? Do they know how to price their products on the export market? Do they know how to do export marketing? Once we address the supply aspect of it, they can always look for demand, because we're always told, these products are needed in Congo, these products are needed in Malawi, these products are needed in Botswana. But if we don't train the people who are supposed to take those products there, then our trade will forever remain low. We'll just be exporting to these countries which we have been usually exporting to. And even the Africa Continental Free Trade will mean nothing to us, because if we can't export to a country like Angola, what makes us think we can export to a country like Nigeria when Angola is just our neighbor, right? So let's master trading with our neighbors before we can look outside, before we can look to the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. Let's deal with the basics.
That makes so much sense. Is like we have a long way to go, and if, like you said, if we could master the basics, I think we could actually do more, and then the country's economic would actually be stabilized. So it's like if we can get the macro side of the economics stabilized, then the micro would actually work out. Makes more sense as you were just giving the suggestions of what we should do. I also realized like those are like some of the challenges we're actually facing as a country, and mostly maybe those are the challenges startups are facing. So it's an interesting way to put it and look at it.
Yeah.
So Kasonde, you have an opportunity to ask me a question.
It's not going to be as challenging as I thought, because I was busy brainstorming what question I should ask you, but I think it should align with what I do. So I understand you started hiking the group,
mm-hmm.
maybe because your friends, some of your friends were coming for our hikes, right? So maybe
they brought you,
so they pulled you. But I want to know the personal decision that, you know, that personal decision or that personal break or make moment that made you say, okay, let me join them. Because I don't believe the time you first came to hike was the first time they invited you. But something in your mind was just like, okay, let me try out hiking. And that, what made you make that decision? And what has made you make the decisions to continue coming for hiking, apart from your friend?
Oh, my friends are always the biggest influencers of my decisions, I have to admit. You know my friends, we're a cool bunch of noisy ladies. So before I moved here, like I mentioned earlier, I stayed in Western Province, Mongu to be specific, and I would always hike alone, right? I think I missed that. I moved to Lusaka in 2018. I missed that. I missed the solitude hiking comes with, just taking a walk, not talking to anybody. And when you're trying to fit in a place like Lusaka, it's very difficult. I am not go out very much type of a person. Like, I don't want to spend my weekend out at different places eating and doing the cool stuff. I love to spend my time alone or with people I love, but too few. I like to be part of people, but too alone. And that's what hiking does, right? My friends and I can hike together. I think you've noticed this. We can hike together, we can come as a bunch, but we will all have personal decisions on how we want to experience the hike. So mostly, yeah. I love hiking because of the solitude I can get. I'm alone, but I'm not alone. Does that make sense? And it comes from like everything I do. Going to the museum, going to an art gallery, going to a bookstore. I can be around people, but still do my own thing. So I think that's why I keep coming back to hiking. I'm around people. I can have pleasantries, but also I am alone and I am having my moment. I'm having my time to just refresh, think about a few stuff I wanted to think about, and mostly not talk to people. Yeah. I always emphasize that I'm not talking to people. I feel like people think I like talking to people. No, I don't. I like talking to people I know, and I'm good at talking to people. Yeah, I like talking to people. Pardon?
They've seen your podcast and they just want to chat.
And I have to admit now, actually, the podcast is growing from what I can see, right? And now I go out in public and they're like, I know you from the podcast. I want to interact and I want to know and get feedback and everything. And I literally, the podcast is one of the few stuff that lights me up when you talk about it. And I'm like, oh, yes, it's like telling me about a book. I'm just also realizing that I'm very introverted. So you might use the podcast as a pickup line to talk to me and get my number, but then you realize that I actually have nothing else to say. We'll literally just talk about that and I'll move on. And I'm really struggling with with people now because I really want to be good to people, and I don't know if I'm good or I'm just being nice. So it's like I'm always in between. But yeah, that's what the hike does for me. I like to hike because I can just be around people I love and care about and still be alone in the process because I like being alone. So yeah. Well, Cassandra, that was a good question. But yeah, I'm always in between stuff. And also, I think hiking works because I get to meet new people, but not the usual people. So in Lusaka, we all meet each other somehow. It's like the usual people. We're all meeting the usual people. So I like going to places that I won't meet the usual people. I don't go to events because I feel like the same people at the same events every time. And we write the same stuff together. And I'm like, well, I don't get any utility from this. I just really have to smile and pretend to be happy. So, yeah, I meet different people and I'm hiking and it's fun. I might not engage, personal decisions. But, yeah, it's fun to be around different people. So the hike also brings a bunch of different people together. And they hang out for like 4 hours, which is fun.
Nice. Those are pretty cool reasons, eh? Those are pretty cool reasons. Yeah, it's just interesting to know how the reasons change from person to person. But yeah, I've heard something different from what I've heard from other people. But yeah, that's good.
And you are doing a good job. I enjoy it, and yeah, it's fun. Like, I'm not the best hiker on most days. You know this. But I get to reflect afterwards. Say, oh, I should have had a better attitude at that hike. Every day. But yeah, it's fun. And I learn something new about myself every time I hike, my strengths, my weaknesses, my fitness, people and life. So it's something we need to do more often. I need to do it more often anyway. Soccer Sunday, what do you look forward to?
What I look forward to in terms of like general life, looking
Yeah,
forward
you.
to.
Yeah, general life. What does Kasonde look forward to? Life, business, career-wise.
I think I'll give you a perspective of that from just general life. I think I look forward to one for my partner to join me here in Zambia, and for us to get married, have kids, and generally just live a happy life, eh? Careers, work comes and goes, but I don't think anything in my view beats a happy family. So I definitely look forward to a happy family, happy life, happy family, enjoying with my wife and kids.
I think that's something nice to look forward to be honest. It sounds fun. And I guess we also take away the fact that it's a little things like that just bring people joy. I think it's nice. I think I don't know when I look forward to that, but it's like on my list of really just finding my person in the world and then doing life together. Cause literally. And having kids. Actually, I feel like I'm taking this over. But one thing I look forward to is my friends having kids so I can be an aunt.
And to reach
Yes.
went to the
I love having nephews and nieces. I can always take them back to their parents. But they're very cool human beings to have in your life. Very interesting. Very annoying, but very interesting.
Very good.
Yeah, like very cute, ne? Too, they're not.
Yeah,
But they're
a
also
lot of
teaching you
work.
stuff. Patience. If you thought you're patient, have a child. No, Cassandra, thank you so much for showing up today. We had an interesting conversation with so many stuff happening in the background. But I'm glad we stuck around and we're consistent and we had like a really, really good conversations. I hope people learn from it. And honestly, I hope you had fun and I hope it helped you give you a different perspective about your life and where you're at right now. So thank you so much. And for everybody listening, again, thank you for listening. Feel free to comment, reach out, share it with a friend, reach out to our socials if you have any questions and you want to be part of the podcast. And yeah, I hope you really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you. Bye for now.